Good afternoon, and welcome to those who have joined us for the Tay Show. Today we'll look at case number 43 of the Beyond Lu, the Blue Cliff Record. Dongshan's No Cold or Heat. I gave a Tay Show on this case some years ago, but like most koans, one can never exhaust it. This is particularly true of Dongshan, that most subtle of Zen masters. So it's well worth revisiting. This is very much about what Dongshan was especially concerned with, both in his training and his teaching. Suchness and the Dharma of the non-sentient. The case reads, a monk asked Dongshan, when cold or heat comes, how can we avoid it? Dongshan said, why don't you go to where there is no cold or heat? The monk said, what do you mean by where there is no cold or heat? Dongshan said, when it is cold, cold finishes the monk. When it is hot, heat totals the monk. And then, as always, Shui To includes a verse. He lets down his hand, but still it's the same as a 10,000-foot cliff. Why must absolute and relative be in an arrangement? The ancient crystal palace reflects the bright moon. The sly hound of Han vainly runs up the stairs. Dongshan Lianjie lived from 807 to 869 of the Common Era, during the so-called Golden Age of Zen, the Tang Dynasty of ancient China. He was a Dharma heir of Yunyan, who was a second-generation descendant of Sher To. If you'll remember, he is the author of Identity of Relative and Absolute that we recite during Sesshin. There are many ways of investigating the great reality. It goes by many names: the Dharma, ultimate truth, Buddha nature, Mu. The word that comes up in connection with the teachings of Dongshan is suchness. It is sometimes translated as thusness, and it comes from the Sanskrit word tathata. One of the Buddha's titles is Tathagata, the one thus come. The question of the nature of suchness is an ongoing theme in the teachings of Dongshan. And if you accept suchness, you also have to accept the teaching of the non-sentient. Suchness cannot make distinctions. Dongshan visited several masters early on in his career. His first encounter was with Guishan, in which he inquired about a saying he heard from the national teacher, Wei Zhong. Wei Zhong insisted that non-sentient beings constantly expound the Dharma, and Wei Zhong stated further that it was a good thing that he himself could not hear non-sentient beings expound, because otherwise the student could not hear his teaching. Dongshan brought this matter up with Guishan. Guishan raised his fly whisk. Dongshan did not understand, and Guishan said, It can never be explained to you by means of one born of a mother and a father. And of course, by that he means one who is in time, space, and karma. He then suggested that Dongshan visit Yunyan for further instruction. The exchange between Dongshan and Yunyan is described in case number 38 in the Denko Roku, the transmission of the lamp. Here is Taigen Dan Leighton's more complete version than the one we have in our koan collection. Dongshan came to Yunyan and said, "Who can hear the Dharma expounded by non-sentient beings?" Yunyan said, "Non-sentient beings are able to hear it." Dongshan said, "Can you hear it?" Yunyan said, "If I could, you wouldn't hear me." Dongshan asked, "Why can I not hear it?" Yunyan raised his hosu, fly whisk, and asked, "Do you hear it yet? Do you hear it yet?" Dongshan said, "I cannot." Yunyan said, "You can't even hear when I expound the Dharma. How do you expect to hear when a non-sentient being expounds the Dharma?" Yunyan then quoted from the Pure Land Amitabha Sutra, "Water birds, tree groves, all without exception, recite the Buddha's name, recite the Dharma." Yunyan could have included mountains, clouds, roof tiles, maybe even a shit stick. Yunyan does not answer directly. He just points to the non-sentient, even as Dongshan does in the present case. Dongshan then composed a gatha, which he presented to Yunyan. "How marvelous, how marvelous. The Dharma expounded by non-sentient beings is inconceivable. Listening with your ears, no sound. Hearing with your eyes, you directly understand." Hearing with the eyes. This is not about some kind of clinical condition called synesthesia, where the brain has lost the ability to distinguish between various modes of sensation. It is far more profound and more subtle than that. The teaching of Buddhas and ancestors is heard by Buddhas and ancestors. But where do you really hear it from? And is it the kind of hearing that is limited to the ear? To hear with the eye cannot be done by a separated ego self. As long as there is eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind, one is a sentient being, trapped in the worlds of distinctions. I see this, I hear that, I touch the other. It's a framework that's fine in a life of time, space, and karma, but it's not enough. As long as we limit our seeing to the eyes, our hearing to the ears, we will not encompass it. Concepts of seeing, hearing, touching, and so forth are more boxes to be free from. Hearing with the ear, seeing with the eye is the activity of sentient beings. Hearing with the eye is the activity of Buddhas and ancestors. It is to perceive reality beyond the sights and sounds of this world, far beyond the six senses. is brought up by Yun Min in case number 47 of the Beyond Lu, the Blue Cliff Record. A monk asked Yun Min, "What is the Dharmakaya?" Yun Min replied, "The six senses do not encompass it." But Dongshan's realization was not yet complete. As he was departing to visit other teachers, Dongshan asked Yunyan, "Later on, if I am asked to describe your Dharma, how should I respond?" After a pause, Yunyan said, "Just this is it." Dongshan was silent for a time, and Yunyan said, "You are now in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing." After he left, later on, Dongshan was wading across a stream. He looked down, saw his reflection, and had a great awakening to the words of his teacher. And he wrote the following verse, "Just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. I now go on alone. Everywhere I meet it. It is now me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. It now is me. I now am not it." This understanding is reflected by Dogen in the Genjo Koan, where he writes, "To carry yourself forward and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening." We must clearly see two things. First, enlightenment is not some kind of amorphous state in which we all float around on a pink cloud singing Kumbaya. And second, all the 10,000 things, codependently arising and passing away, experience themselves, each and every Dharma, each and every phenomenon. The personal self of I, me, and mine is a construct. We pick and choose what parts we will have for this personal self, and then set it in opposition to the universe. Now, who do you think is going to win that contest? The self that I construct is not reality, but only the smallest, infinitesimal piece of it. It's not a bad piece. In fact, it's necessary. For without it, there's no practice. But we must see it for what it is and not give it the overweening influence that it usually demands. A monk asked Dongshan, "When cold or heat comes, how can we avoid it?" Dongshan said, "Why don't you go where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What do you mean by where there is no cold or heat?" Dongshan said, "When it is cold, cold finishes the monk. When it is hot, heat totals the monk." In commenting on this case, Dogen instructs us that we must go to the summit of heat, directly to the eye of heat, likewise to the summit of cold, to the eye of cold. But no one can do that. Not even the Buddha can do that. To paraphrase Yunyan, no one born of a father and a mother can do that. What does it take? If I pick up a stick, we could spend hours debating its size, shape, color, composition. and come to no conclusion whatever. Or what's worse, we might. If I see it with no preconceptions, no judgments, no opinions, with no knowledge, no self, it is perfectly clear in and of itself. I can't teach the stick anything. It can teach me a great deal. It now is me, I now, and not it. Let the non-sentient teach you. Let the cold teach you about cold. Let the heat teach you about heat. See, hear, taste, and touch heat. See, hear, taste, and touch cold. But you cannot do that except by dropping away body and mind. Every breath, every move, every moment of sitting is a dropping away. If body and mind are dropped away, where is the self? Where are sentient beings? Where are non-sentient beings? We reach the eye of cold to perceive this moment of cold as cold itself. Cold finishes you. Cold is you, whole and complete. Then is there really any such thing as cold? If body and mind are dropped away, we reach the eye of heat to perceive this moment of heat is heat itself. Heat totals you. Heat is you, whole and complete. Then is there really any such thing as heat? In this very moment, the non-sentient teaches the sentient, that's us. That is their great function. It is not for us to go forth and confirm the 10,000 things. It is for the 10,000 things to come forth and confirm themselves, which are not separate from this self. As you sit to see and feel the Zafu, is the Zafu itself. If you are washing a dish, your seeing, feeling, hearing that plate is none other than the plate itself. Your awareness of the Zafu is the Zafu. What more do you need? Can you ever be separate from your own awareness? And yet we keep adding on to it, putting a head on the one we already have. Likewise, your study of Zazen is Zazen itself. How could it possibly be otherwise? Zazen finishes you. What is finished? What is totaled? What is killed? The self disappears in uniting with the practice. Then there is no self, and no practice, and no heat, and no cold. If we practice like this, something happens to the way in which we sit on our zafus, the way in which we wash plates or engage our zazen. Something happens to the way we feel the heat and the cold. The bodhisattva arises. Without our even being conscious of it, we practice mindfulness, care, and reverence toward all things. All beings, sentient and non-sentient, all that breathes and does not breathe. Every time I put on or take off my rock suit, I try to remember to touch it to my forehead in reverence for the teaching and the Dharma it represents. Can we learn to do that with whatever we touch? Not necessarily the particular physical act. We don't want to bang heads with our spoons or our bowls, but with the same care, the same reverence. But be careful. This practice is not about trying to manufacture a particular emotion or mind state. It is very simply about what we do moment to moment. If we do that consistently, it informs our perception of the great reality, even as our perception of the great reality informs our actions. Practice is a two-way street. Here in Sesshin is our best opportunity to practice like that. It is built into our forms. We bow as we enter the Zendo. We bow to our seats. We bow and chant. So practice with the whole body mind, every moment. And then Choito's verse. As is my habit lately, I'll read it and comment on it line by line. He lets down his hand, but still it's the same as a 10,000-foot cliff. Comment. He makes it possible, he doesn't make it easy. Why must absolute and relative be in arrangement? Comment. Two aspects of the same reality. How can there be an arrangement? The ancient crystal palace reflects the bright moon. Comment. And yet, how many try to grasp that reflection? The sly hound of Han vainly runs up the stairs. Comment. The clever fellow follows his nose to nowhere. Nowhere to go. Nothing to grasp. Just sit. Just listen to the teaching of the non-sentient. Listen not just with the ear, but with your entire being. Together with all beings, we realize the way.